Chapter 57. The Smallwheat family, in a rather ill-favored and ill-savored neighborhood, though one of its rising grounds bears the name of Mount Pleasant, the elfin Smallwheat, christened Bartholomew and known on the domestic hearth as Bart, passes that limited portion of his time on which the office and its contingencies have no claim. He dwells in a little narrow street, always solitary, shady, and sad, closely bricked in on all sides like a tomb, but where there yet lingers the stump of an old forest tree whose flavor is about as fresh and natural as the Smallwheat smack of youth. There has been only one child in the Smallwheat family for several generations. Little old men and women there have been, but no child, until Mr. Smallwheat's grandmother, now living, became weak in her intellect, and fell, for the first time, into a childish state, with such infantine graces as a total want of observation, memory, understanding, and interest, and an eternal disposition to fall asleep over the fire and into it. Mr. Smallwheat's grandmother has undoubtedly brightened the family. Mr. Smallwheat's grandfather is likewise of the party. He is in a helpless condition, as to his lower, and nearly so, as to his upper, limbs, but his mind is unimpaired. It holds, as well as it ever held, the first four rules of arithmetic, and a certain small collection of the hardest facts. In respect of a deity, reverence, wonder, and other such phrenological attributes, it is no worse off than it used to be. Everything that Mr. Smallwheat's grandfather ever put away in his mind was a grub at first, and is a grub at last. In all his life he has never bred a single butterfly. The father of this pleasant grandfather, of the neighborhood of Mount Pleasant, was a horny-skinned, two-legged, money-getting species of spider who spun webs to catch unwary flies, and retired into holes until they were entrapped. The name of this old pagan's god was Compound Interest. He lived for it, married it, died of it. Meeting with a heavy loss in an honest little enterprise in which all the loss was intended to have been on the other side, he broke something necessary to his existence, therefore it couldn't have been his heart, and made an end of his career. As his character was not good, and he had been bred at a charity school in a complete course, according to question and answer, of those ancient people the Amorites and Hittites, he was frequently quoted as an example of the failure of education. His spirit shone through his son, to whom he had always preached of going out early in life, and whom he made a clerk in a sharp scrivener's office at 12 years old. There the young gentleman improved his mind, which was of a lean and anxious character, and developing the family gifts, gradually elevated himself into the discounting profession. Going out early in life and marrying late, as his father had done before him, he too begat a lean and anxious-minded son, who in his turn, going out early in life and marrying late, became the father of Bartholomew and Judith Smallwheat, twins. During the whole time consumed in the slow growth of this family tree, the house of Smallwheat, always early to go out and late to marry, has strengthened itself in its practical character, has discarded all amusements, discount and install storybooks, fairy tales, fictions, and fables, and banished all levities whatsoever. Hence the gratifying fact that it has had no child born to it, and that the complete little men and women whom it has produced have been observed to bear a likeness to old monkeys with something depressing on their minds. At the present time, in the dark little parlor certain feet below the level of the street, a grim, hard, uncouth parlor, only ornamented with the coarsest of baize table covers, and the hardest of sheet iron tea trays, and offering in its decorative character no bad allegorical representation of Grandfather Smallweed's mind, seated in two black horsehair porter's chairs, one on each side of the fireplace, the superannuated Mr. and Mrs. Smallweed while away the rosy hours. On the stove are a couple of trivets for the pots and kettles, which it is Grandfather Smallweed's usual occupation to watch, and projecting from the chimney piece between them is a sort of brass gallows for roasting, which he also superintends when it is in action. Under the venerable Mr. Smallweed's seat, and guarded by his spindle legs, is a drawer in his chair, reported to contain property to a fabulous amount. Beside him is a spare cushion with which he is always provided in order that he may have something to throw at the venerable partner of his respected age, whenever she makes an allusion to money, a subject on which he is particularly sensitive. And where's Bart? Grandfather Smallweed inquires of Judy, Bart's twin sister. He ain't come in yet, says Judy. It's his tea time, isn't it? No. How much do you mean to say at once then? 10 minutes. Hey? 10 minutes.
Loud on the part of Judy.
Oh, says Grandfather Smallweed. 10 minutes.
Grandmother Smallweed, who has been mumbling and shaking her head at the trivets, hearing figures mentioned, connects them with money and screeches like a horrible old parrot without any plumage. 10 10-pound notes. Grandfather Smallweed immediately throws the cushion at her.
Drat you, be quiet, says the good old man. The effect of this act of jaculation is twofold. It not only doubles up Mrs. Smallweed's head against the side of her porter's chair, and causes her to present, when extricated by her granddaughter, a highly unbecoming state of cap, but the necessary exertion recoils on Mr. Smallweed himself, whom it throws back into his porter's chair like a broken puppet. The excellent old gentleman being at these times a mere clothes bag with a black skull cap on the top of it, does not present a very animated appearance until he has undergone the two operations at the hands of his granddaughter of being shaken up like a great bottle, and poked and punched like a great bolster. Some indication of a neck being developed in him by these means, he and the sharer of his life's evening again fronting one another in their two porter's chairs, like a couple of sentinels long forgotten on their post by the black sergeant, Death. Judy the twin is worthy company for these associates. She is so indubitably sister to Mr. Smallweed the younger, that the two kneaded into one would hardly make a young person of average proportions, while she so happily exemplifies the before mentioned family likeness to the monkey tribe that attired in a spangled robe and cap she might walk about the table and on the top of a barrel organ without exciting much remark as an unusual specimen. Under existing circumstances, however, she is dressed in a plain, spare gown of brown stuff. Judy never owned a doll, never heard of Cinderella, never played at any game. She once or twice fell into children's company when she was about 10 years old, but the children couldn't get on with Judy, and Judy couldn't get on with them. She seemed like an animal of another species, and there was instinctive repugnance on both sides. It is very doubtful whether Judy knows how to laugh. She has so rarely seen the thing done that the probabilities are strong the other way. Of anything like a youthful laugh, she certainly can have no conception. If she were to try one, she would find her teeth in her way, modeling that action of her face, as she has unconsciously modeled all its other expressions, on her pattern of sordid age. Such as Judy. And her twin brother couldn't wind up a top for his life. He knows no more of Jack the Giant Killer, or of Sinbad the Sailor than he knows of the people in the stars. He could as soon play at leapfrog, or at cricket as change into a cricket or a frog himself. But he is so much the better off than his sister, that on his narrow world of fact an opening has dawned into such broader regions as lie within the ken of Mr. Guppy. Hence his admiration and his emulation of that shining enchanter. Judy, with a gong-like clash and clatter, sets one of the sheet-iron tea trays on the table, and arranges cups and saucers. The bread she puts on in an iron basket, and the butter and not much of it, in a small pewter plate. Grandfather Smallweed looks hard after the tea as it is served out, and asks Judy where the girl is. Charlie, do you mean? Says Judy.
Hey?
From Grandfather Smallweed.
Charlie, do you mean? This touches a spring in Grandmother Smallweed, who, chuckling as usual at the trivets, cries, over the water. Charlie over the water, Charlie over the water to Charlie, Charlie over the water to Charlie, and becomes quite energetic about it. Grandfather looks at the cushion, but has not sufficiently recovered his late exertion. Ah, he says when there is silence. If that's her name, she eats a deal. It would be better to allow her for her keep. Judy, with her brother's wink, shakes her head and purses up her mouth into no without saying it. No? Returns the old man. Why not? She'd want sixpence a day, and we can do it for less, says Judy. Sure? Judy answers with a nod of deepest meaning and calls, as she scrapes the butter on the loaf with every precaution against waste, and cuts it in two slices. You, Charlie, where are you? Timidly obedient to the summons, a little girl in a rough apron and a large bonnet, with her hands covered with soap and water and a scrubbing brush in one of them, appears, and curtsies. What work are you about now? Says Judy, making an ancient snap at her like a very sharp old beldam. I'm a cleaning the upstairs back room, miss, replies Charlie. Mind you do it thoroughly, and don't loiter. Shirking won't do for me. Make haste. Go along, cries Judy with a stamp upon the ground. You girls are more trouble than you're worth, by half. On this severe matron, as she returns to her task of scraping the butter and cutting the bread, falls the shadow of her brother, looking in at the window, for whom, knife and loaf in hand, she opens the street door. Aye, Bart, says Grandfather Smallweed. Here you are, hey? Here I am, says Bart. Been along with your friend again, Bart? Small nods. Dining at his expense, Bart? Small nods again. That's right. Live at his expense as much as you can, and take warning by his foolish example. That's the use of such a friend. The only use you can put him to, says the venerable sage. His grandson, without receiving this good counsel as dutifully as he might, honors it with all such acceptance as may lie in a slight wink and a nod and takes a chair at the tea table. The four old faces then hover over teacups like a company of ghastly cherubim, Mrs. Smallweed perpetually twitching her head and chattering at the trivets and Mr. Smallweed requiring to be repeatedly shaken up like a large black draft. Yes, says the good old gentleman, reverting to his lesson of wisdom. That's such advice as your father would have given you, Bart. You never saw your father. More's the pity. He was my true son. Whether it is intended to be conveyed that he was particularly pleasant to look at, on that account, does not appear. He was my true son, repeats the old gentleman, folding his bread and butter on his knee, a good accountant, and died 15 years ago. Mrs. Smallweed, following her usual instinct, breaks out with £1,500. £1,500 in a black box, £1,500 locked up, £1,500 put away and hid. Her worthy husband, setting aside his bread and butter, immediately discharges the cushion at her, crushes her against the side of her chair, and falls back in his own, overpowered. His appearance, after visiting Mrs. Smallweed with one of these admonitions, is particularly impressive, and not wholly prepossessing, firstly because the exertion generally twists his black skull cap over one eye, and gives him an air of goblin rakishness, secondly because he mutters violent imprecations against Mrs. Smallweed, and thirdly because the contrast between those powerful expressions and his powerless figure is suggestive of a billful old malignant who would be very wicked if he could. All this, however, is so common in the Smallweed family circle that it produces no impression. The old gentleman is merely shaken, and as his internal feathers beaten up, the cushion is restored to its usual place beside him, and the old lady, perhaps with her cap adjusted and perhaps not, is planted in her chair again, ready to be bowled down like a ninepin. Some time elapses in the present instance before the old gentleman is sufficiently cool to resume his discourse, and even then he mixes it up with several edifying expletives addressed to the unconscious partner of his bosom, who holds communication with nothing on earth but the trivets. As thus, if your father, Bart, had lived longer, he might have been worth a deal of money, you brimstone chatterer, but just as he was beginning to build up the house that he had been making the foundations for, through many a year, you jade of a magpie, jackdaw, and poll parrot, what do you mean, he took ill, and died of a low fever, always being a sparing, and a spare man, you'll been a good son, and I think I meant to have been one. But I wasn't. I was a thundering bad son, that's the long and the short of it, and never was a credit to anybody. Surprising, cries the old man. However, Mr. George resumes, the less said about it, the better now. Come, you know the agreement. Always a pipe out of the 2 months' interest. Bosh, it's all correct. You needn't be afraid to order the pipe. Here's the new bill, and here's the 2 months' interest money, and a devil and all of a scrape it is to get it together in my business. Mr. George sits, with his arms folded, consuming the family and the parlor, while Grandfather Smallweed is assisted by Judy to 2 black leathern cases out of a locked bureau, in one of which he secures the document he has just received, and from the other takes another similar document which HL of business care I should like to throw a cat at you instead of a cushion, and I will too, if you make such a confounded fool of yourself. And your mother, who was a prudent woman as dry as a chip, just dwindled away like touchwood after you and Judy were born. You are an old pig. You are a brimstone pig. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.